Order, Carla, will you please call the roll?
Sorry. Saltzman? Leonard? Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Can you please read Council Communications, item number 1077?
Request of David Regan to address Council regarding more green jobs for the unemployed homeless.
Mr. Regan? Can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 1078?
Request of Reba Strickland to address Council regarding Bureau of Housing and Community Development programs and grants.
Ms. Strickland? All right. Can you please read the title for Council Communications 1079?
Request of Rondine Jasline to address Council regarding Mayor Adams.
Ms. Jasline? Can you please read the title for Council Communications 1080?
1080, request of Kelly M. Bryan to address Council regarding city ban or mandatory fee on single-use plastic bags.
Good morning. We're glad you're here. We were getting lonely. Usually they're not. It must be the summer weather. So all you have to do is give us your first and last name for the record, not your address, and that clock on the big hunk of wood in front of you will help you count down your 3 minutes. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. My name is Kelly M. Bryan. I'm an artist with Leave No Plastics Behind. I'm also a board member of Cracked Pots, which is a local arts and reuse organization. And I'm a certified master recycler with the program that you probably know about, the master recycler program through the county and city and amorphous group of organizations. I'm here to ask that you help lead Portland into joining the growing world community of countries, large cities, small towns, and even companies that are banning the use of single-use plastic bags. And I know you have a task force on this issue, and I know you have a lot of information about it, but I would just like to keep the issue in your minds. And I know earlier this year you postponed thinking about it because of the environment, and I think that's an important consideration. But I'd just like to say that I think the environment can't wait. And I think I would just want to remind you that people's behaviors are adaptable. People change. There's often a big flurry and controversy, and certainly there's going to be opposition, as everywhere that adopts these bans has shown. But I think once the flurry dies down, people figure it out. I personally support a ban on plastic and single-use plastic, and possibly a tax on or a charge for the paper. But you know, it's a habit. People get used to it. I have started carrying bags myself, but sometimes I forget. And when you forget, there are alternatives. And most people, and especially Portlanders, are creative. I've used the detachable hood of my jacket to carry apples. You know, in Japan, they use this thing called the furoshiki, which is just a square of cloth. You can use your coat, a scarf. You know, it's not even just about bags. But anyway, I just want to remind you that the impact of plastic bags is huge all over the world. You know this already. They end up in the bellies of animals, birds, fish. We are probably ending up ingesting them. But also in terms of in the recycling stream, there's just been no way to keep them out of the material recovery facilities. They end up, as I'm sure you know, in getting tangled up in the conveyor belts that lead to where the materials are separated. Far West Fibers estimates that they spend a quarter of their time digging out plastic bags from the machinery where they slow things down. I don't know what that means.
It means you're out of time, but any last thought?
Well, yes. My last thought is that I urge you not to support the biodegradables. And I brought a thing that I'll give that that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability has put out that you've probably seen, but maybe not, that says that the biodegradables are not the way to go, that they often don't biodegrade, and they can get mixed up in the recycling stream. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate that.
And thank you for the reminder for people not to put the plastic bags in their recycling. That would really help if people right now could not put plastic bags in recycling.
So we're going to go to the time certain, and if any late arrivals on communications have
actually
arrived.
Actually, Mayor, David Regan, 1077, is here.
So we'll do you after our time certain, so we can keep on time here. So can you please read the title for time certain item 1081?
Do you want to do the consent agenda?
Oh, we have Commissioner Saltzman. Yes. Consent agenda. Would anyone like to pull an item off the consent agenda? All right. Please call the roll on the consent agenda.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Now, can you please read the title for time certain council item 1081?
Pay claim of Randall Cooley.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Mark Sterriger, Risk Management.
Larry O'Day, Acting Chief.
Before you is an ordinance to settle the Randall Cooley litigation against Portland Police Bureau for a sum of $78,500. In June, the City Attorney and Risk Management attended a mediation with Federal Magistrate Papik and the proposed settlement was negotiated pending City Council approval. A trial had been scheduled to begin on June 3rd. Our discovery in this case has been extensive, and the city attorney has deposed numerous witnesses. Resolving this lawsuit through the mediation process is in the city's best interest, and therefore we present this ordinance for your approval. We will be glad to answer any questions.
Questions from the city council?
So I have a question. Since Commissioner Leonard's on vacation this week and had posed a question last week, the question I would have for you, sir, is in light of the underlying conduct that's alleged, is there anything that we take away from this going forward in terms of how we do our job better or how we do training differently, or is there any takeaway from this particular incident?
Yeah, in this particular incident, at the internal investigation, there were 7 allegations.
And I apologize, you need to give your name for the record.
Larry O'Day, I'm sorry. The allegation that was sustained, the other allegations were exonerated, meaning the officer's actions were proper and within procedure. The actions that were sustained were for failing to document and write a report. We have a very clear policy that says when we have encounters like this, that these incidents need to be documented and need to be spelled out in a report. Our policy does cover that. The officer failed to follow that policy. He listed reasons why he had ended that encounter to assist with a more urgent manner, and in that time frame failed to get that information, but it's still his actions did not follow our policy. But our policy is adequate that covers what he should have done, and the policy is very clearly put out to officers. It's a policy very well known.
So my question is, the office is found to follow policy. What's the process for us to look at our policies to see whether they need to be updated? When I met with you yesterday, you mentioned this particular hold has been in use for 25 years, and I know from my work in psychiatry that things that we did 25 years ago are now no longer considered best practices. So how does the Bureau look? What's the process for on an annual basis or after an incident like this for looking at the particular policies involved to see if they're still what we want to have in our procedures?
You bet. Two tracks. Our formal policies, our manual policy and procedure, our policies are reviewed every 2 years. When different incidents or occasions come up that cause us to review a policy before that formal review time, changes can still be made, and the chief will put out an executive order amending a policy if the policy is seen to be deficient or needing change. The practices that make up parts in the policy in regards to defensive tactics and our control holds are reviewed very regularly. Our officers go to seminars and get brought up to speed on what are the nationwide best trends, or do our practices still meet those. They meet regularly with local law enforcement trainers as well, and make sure our procedures, are we seeing anything different than what they're seeing? Are the techniques we're using still valid? And then we also keep a sergeant full-time down at the basic police academy to make sure that the procedures they're teaching are in line with the procedures that we're using so that we're still using correct processes. Also, after incidents, the training division reviews reports. They review after actions. They review tort claims, and they review items from the review board and look at, are there issues that cause us to question some of the techniques that we're using? And then they evaluate, are our practices still where they need to be? And then they make changes based on that.
Who's involved in assessing that whole set of things?
The formal policy is there's a huge amount of input in that. People from the review board that is made up of command staff, of peers, of citizens, IPR, and peer members are all involved in that review board process. And when we then we'll send out, here's the policy, here's what we're looking at, and people red pen, put down your input. What do you think? What are we missing? Areas of concern. And then that's all collected and evaluated, and then the chief will make a final decision on taking this input where we need to change our policies.
Is there a police bureau advisory committee made up of citizens? I know we used to have the chief's forum, and we haven't been doing that for a while. What's the citizen input into that kind of a process?
Citizens are in the make of our review board policies. We have citizen members that are voting members in the review board process.
And after an incident like this, I would like to know, and I think this is one of Commissioner Lennon's concerns last week, was the, not what the discipline was, but was there discipline as part of the report. I'd also like a follow-up after this process that you've mentioned has been gone through to let me know what was decided. Yes, the policy is okay. No, we changed the policy. Some kind of a follow-up so that I know that when the city has been found or agreed to settle, that we have taken a good look at what the policies are and discover whether there are system-wide changes that need to be made or not. I'd like to have that information.
Good. And in this case, for the first part of your question that I can answer now, there were the seven allegations. Six of those five of those were exonerated, meaning the officer's actions, and this includes all the use of force allegations that they were proper and within policy. There was one allegation about profanity that was unproven, and the allegation that the officer was sustained on was that they failed to document the incident in a report, and he was disciplined for that allegation, for the sustained part of that allegation.
Thank you. And so the follow-up I'd like on this particular case is when you've done your process of looking at the particular policies, the six allegations that were found to be within policy, I'd like to know what the outcome of that was and who was involved in that review.
You bet.
Thank you.
Clarifying question, is it $78,750 to two people or each?
Oh, well, one plaintiff. There's one. Randall Cooley is the plaintiff.
Okay. And the Stephen Sherlag is the lawyer?
The lawyer, yes, sir.
Any other questions from counsel? Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Appreciate it. This is an emergency item. So unless there's additional counsel discussion. Oh, does anyone seek to? Thank you. Does anyone want to testify on counsel item 1081? All right. Can you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
This has been a very helpful discussion. Thank you. And I think it does bring to light that when we are found, we're making settlements, that we need to look at citywide policies and make sure that we're doing whatever we can to provide the best service that we can. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 1081 is approved. I understand Mr. Reagan is here, so please come forward.
Item 1077. Request of David Reagan to address council regarding more green jobs for unemployed homeless.
Welcome back. Glad you're here.
Just good morning.
Need your first and last name, and David. I think you remember you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. David Reagan, a lot of it you've heard of before, and just here to remind you that there are,
As of January of this year, over 17,000. It's got to be higher than that by now. Unsheltered people in Oregon, and about half of those are in the Portland metro area. I'd like to encourage Commissioner Fish to encourage the Coordinating Committee to End Homelessness to start you've got your own statewide count that keeps saying 1,600 in January. We know it's much higher. And while it's great to be able to say we've created this much housing and this much unsheltered population, that's a good ratio. The truth is the unsheltered population is much higher and the ratio is much smaller. And the reason I think the numbers are important is because we need to have a reality check. There's a lot of people that are on the edge of homelessness, living with friends, living in cars, living at their parents again, living not knowing if this new economic development plan for the city will pan out in terms of jobs for them. I have looked over your five-year plan, as a lot of people have, and I like the five-year plan. It's great. Portland is on the cutting edge for attracting new green businesses and for being a leader. What's missing in that jobs inventory, the plans for, how many new jobs are planned for the next 5 years?
10,000.
It's great. Missing from that list of jobs are the most inexpensive kind to create, which are farming jobs, gardening jobs. I'm just going to say it. There's nothing wrong with poor farms. It's time again. During the Great Depression, the United States was about 40% rural. If a guy couldn't find a job in the city or a family couldn't make its way, find a job and support itself in the city for a year or more. So they always knew somebody on a farm someplace, like an uncle or a cousin or a friend, and they could go back to the farm and they had the dignity of self-support. And they weren't a burden on state coffers and federal coffers in terms of welfare. Things have changed. We're less than 10% rural today. But we're still agricultural animals. We've gotten so used to buying things in the grocery store and the coldness of the money exchange, we forget this. We need to reteach and relearn agriculture, especially to some 6,000 to 8,000 without jobs in the Portland metro area. I think it's actually harmful to continually give people food and shelter but not expect any kind of work for them. It can be harmful. The Coordinating Committee to End Homelessness, its mission is to focus on the chronically homeless. And I ask you, please think more about the newly homeless, the people that have until recently been working and who need jobs. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Regan. Can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 1094?
Accept a grant in the amount of $1,639,677 from the Oregon Department of Transportation for the US 26 Adaptive Signal System Project to optimize traffic signal timing along US 26 from Southeast Milwaukee Avenue to Southeast 52nd Avenue.
This is a second reading vote only. Would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1094 is approved. Can you please read the title for Emergency Ordinance, Council Calendar Item 1095?
Amend the intergovernmental agreement with Washington County to perform purchase obligations and extend time period for distribution of equipment, supplies, and services procured as a result of the Urban Areas Security Initiative Grant, fiscal year 2008.
This is a routine matter. Do we have anyone from the Office of Emergency Management here? Up, come on up. Does council have any questions regarding this? You can have a seat. All righty. Thank you. This is an emergency ordinance. Does anyone wish to testify on Council Item 1095? Can you please call the roll, Carla?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1095 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading, Council Calendar Item 1096?
Authorize revenue bonds for renovations and improvements to PGE Park.
Can you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
So I recognize I was in the minority 2 weeks ago, and there may come a time when I will vote for something on this issue. However, this ordinance specifically states that the general fund is at risk, that we're authorizing the sale of bonds before we know exactly what we're buying in PGE Park renovations, and I believe it's premature to authorize the sale of bonds before the structure for the bonds is finalized and the annual debt service payments are known. No.
Fish?
I just, with all due respect, I do want to point out that all revenue bonds issued by this city are backed by the general fund. And if the criteria was that the general fund gave us full faith and credit, and therefore we should not issue bonds, we would not do bonds in most of the housing work that I'm responsible for. So I appreciate very much my colleague's point. But we happen to have a very healthy credit rating, which allows us to use that as a backstop. But to my knowledge, we have never come close to ever having to put the general fund at risk. And that's it. And I share your concern on that. I, too, found myself in the minority on a number of issues relating to baseball and soccer, starting with the two-stadium deal, the Rose Quarter plan, the portion that brought us to Lentz and would involve using urban renewal dollars, and significantly expanding the footprint of a baseball stadium in a regional park. The reason that I am supporting a deal for soccer at PG Park is that it actually meets the conditions that I set out early on to shift virtually all of the costs and the risks to Mr. Paulson and to sports fans. Because I also believe that soccer has a significant chance of being successful here, and it's not just because it's a global sport, but because we are home to Adidas and Nike, because youth soccer is going through the roof. We are home to the national champion, UP Women Pilots, and frankly, soccer is a sport that we have seen when we get the right teams at PG Park brings out big crowds. I believe this will be a net positive for our community. The bond piece that we're being asked to vote on today are bonds issued by the city through the Spectator Facility Fund. They're backed by user fees, which means the fans who come to basketball games, hockey games, baseball games, and soccer games, and Mr. Paulson himself. After looking at this carefully, I believe that from a funding standpoint, the investment, the level of risk involved is manageable. No urban renewal funds are involved in this project, which means no money dedicated for infrastructure, housing, or small business development will be used to fund any portion of this. I do not believe that the risk is substantial, and I believe that the potential benefit to the city, the upside on this deal, is quite large. The last and most significant risk factor that's been identified in hearings before this council has to do with 2025. And there is at least a theoretical possibility that in 2025 the Trailblazers will leave Portland, that we will not be able to find a use for the Rose Quarter or the Rose Garden, that we won't have a replacement team, and that we won't be able to sell our assets. And after that series of highly improbable and unlikely contingencies, there may be some need to find additional ways to backstop the bonds. I frankly, when I look at that scenario, to me, it is equivalent to me worrying about the fact that I could cross the street tomorrow and be run over by a car. It is, I think, a manageable level of risk. So while I have been critical of some of the past financing proposals, I believe this one is as responsible and puts the risk and the cost where it belongs on Mr. Paulson's shoulders and on fans, and therefore I vote aye.
Adams.
Aye. 1096 is approved. Can you please read the title for purchasing report, Council Item 1097?
Accept bid of Parker Northwest Paving Company for the Northeast Alderwood Road Signals Project for $2,017,734.
Mr. Baer.
Murray, Mayor Adams, member of City Council. I'm Jeff Baer.
And if I could interrupt, you have a new position within the city.
I will be taking that on probably tomorrow, I believe.
Mark, yes. Maybe you could announce to the council this important advancement in your career.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to do that. What we're doing in the Office of Management and Finance is to create a new position. I know all of you know that Tom Feeler retired at the end of June, and I'm going to be taken on as the Director of the Internal Business Services Operations, which will include procurement, city fleet, facilities, risk management, and also printing and distribution. So added responsibilities. So
congratulations.
Appreciate the support from the council on that. And turning to the purchasing agent report, for this project here, I'm here asking for permission to execute a contract with Parker Northwest Paving. This is on behalf of the Portland Bureau of Transportation for the Northeast Alderwood Road Signals Project. Just some of the issues related to the solicitation process we went through. We issued a invitation to bid. We received 7 bids. They ranged from $2 million, which is the low bid for Parker Northwest Paving, to a little over $2.4 million. The amount that we're executing the contract is $2,017,733.71, which represents about 31% below the engineer's estimate. We had identified 15 divisions of work for subcontracting opportunities. Of that, 4 subcontracts are being awarded to minority women and emerging small businesses, representing 4.8% of the total subcontract dollars. So we have representatives from transportation and also the contractor, if there are any questions.
Questions from council? Anyone wish to testify on council item 1097? Carla, would you please call the roll? Or do I have to have a motion? I can't remember.
To accept the, so moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded to accept the purchasing report. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
It's disturbing to me to see the low level of minority women participation, and I know that we're going to be working on that. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
I agree. The low level of participation by certified women and minority firms is low, and to the Parker Northwest Paving Company, we need your help in getting that up. I know you're trying. Thanks. Aye. 1097 is approved. Council calendar item, purchasing report 1098.
Accept bid of Emery and Sons Construction, Inc. for the Clay Taylor Reconstruction and Green Streets Project for $2,391,887.
Mr. Baer.
And this is a report on behalf of the Bureau of Environmental Services. This is for the Southeast Clay Taylor Reconstruction. We did receive 9 bids on this. They range from $2.3 million up to $3 million. The contract amount of $2,391,886.50, which is 36 below the engineer's estimate. In this, since we filed the report, I want to identify what we've been doing in working with the contractor to increase their minority women emerging small business participation. We've managed to bump that up to a total of 23.6% of the total project amount being awarded to minority women and emerging small businesses, or 55% of the total subcontracts that are being issued resulting from this contract. The contractor, Emery & Sons, is a local contractor. They are in compliance with our equal benefits and EEO and business license. And we have represented from BES here in case there are questions.
Discussion from council. Commissioner Fritz.
I noticed that this next low bidder had a higher percentage of minority women, emerging small businesses. Is there any weighting in our evaluation of bids? Why would we have been able to give the contract to the second lowest bidder?
No, we would not, because under Oregon law, we're required to do an invitation to bid, which looks at the cost of the project and the lowest cost coming in. Because we don't do an evaluative process similar to what we do in a request for proposal, there's not criteria that we would judge them against. So it's based simply upon whether or not they met our programmatic requirements, like our good faith effort or workforce hiring training program, which they did. Then we look at the price and ensure that they are in compliance with those programs, and it comes down to the cost.
Let me take a crack at that, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that the previous disparity study, the facts manifested in the previous evaluation that we call the Croson Disparity Study, did not give us the legal predicate to provide points or weighting in our contracting process. But Commissioner Fish, who I've assigned to do the new Croson Disparity Study, might show different results that might allow us to begin to do what you're saying. It all depends on what the facts that come out of the Croson Disparity Study show.
That's correct.
Okay. But that would still only be for evaluative approaches, not low bid.
Well, there are some situations once we analyze the data and do the surveys for the disparity study update. I mean, it's possible that it could show that there we could have specific goals associated with that, and then we could use that to determine who is actually low bid. Whether or not that happens or not will depend on the study.
I learned yesterday that the state has mandatory requirements for percentages of particular target supportive groups. Why can't we do that? Same answer?
No, it's federal money.
Federal dollars. That's correct.
Federal transportation dollars have goals.
Mandatory goals.
Correct.
And we can't unless the disparity study shows that we can?
Correct.
And we follow the state's program. For example, a lot of the transportation construction projects are pass-through funds through the Department of Transportation, the federal. And their program, their Federal Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program, applies and trumps anything that we do. And so we do have specific goals that fall along the federal requirements.
But if I could say, I appreciate very much, Amanda, the drift of your comment, because, for example, as the mayor and I are working on the disparity study and looking fresh at this issue, you know, in this current environment, we're finding that there are some minority-owned GCs that are general contractors that are finding that they are being, they're having additional challenges getting contracting opportunities because in a down economy, some of the bigger players are actually now bidding for work they normally wouldn't go after, undercutting some of the smaller emerging businesses. And these are all issues that we're framing for consideration as we go forward with this study. And you'll be hearing within a week or two a presentation on the outline of the study and a request for your consent to move forward with the disparity study.
So on the federal level, when they did a study, their version of a Croson disparity study on the national federal level, it showed the kind of disparity, legal disparity, as defined by these court cases that they could do goals.
Okay. So, and I learned from Winston Saladino, who was here a minute ago, he met with me yesterday to talk about the Kelly Green Street process. And one of the other concerns that I just like to throw into the hopper is how about hiring minorities and local folks within the contract? I don't think that, is there any kind of process to evaluate which businesses are good at hiring Portland people? I know we had the local, hire local first resolution.
Yeah, unfortunately, the local business enterprise designation, which this council passed, does not apply, legally cannot apply to construction contracts, but there's more to the answer.
And part of that is any construction project exceeding $200,000, which is the bulk of our contracts, we have our workforce training and hiring program in which we work with the apprenticeship program and have them look at diversifying the trade. So in terms of where we find types of work that have apprenticeable hours associated with that, we work directly with those trade unions to look for opportunities for minorities and for women.
This is obviously an issue that's very important to all the council and something that I'd like to learn more about. I wonder if we might consider a work session at some point.
I'm just going to ask that if we could defer this conversation until we come forward with the disparity study, we'd be open to lots of good ideas about
it. Thank you very much.
And I would say, too, this particular issue will be part of the disparity study to look at our programmatic areas that we've had in place since the Croson decision. And they'll be reviewing that. And part of the study will have recommendations on should we do something differently or are we doing everything that we can do.
And also, I might add, the mayor is establishing a fair contracting board, which is looking at the big picture. We will be establishing an advisory body to help us to monitor the disparity study.
Oh, good.
And Commissioner Fritz, we'd welcome participation from your office.
Perfect.
You have someone in your office who I would even be willing to nominate for that position.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
And the disparity study this time, I assume, will include issues related to workforce, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Anyone wishes to testify on Council Item 1098? Entertain a motion to accept.
So moved.
Second.
Can you please call the roll on purchasing report, Council Item 1098?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you. This has been a very helpful discussion. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1098 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, Council Calendar Item 1099?
authorize acquisition of two lots from Donald L. Tyndall and Ellie C. Tyndall as a component of the Gray to Green initiative.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is an ordinance to authorize the city purchase of two residential lots near Kingsley D. Bundy Park and Clatsop Buttes in the Johnson Creek watershed. I have a picture here. The purchase is part of the Bureau of Environmental Services Gray to Green initiative and Portland Parks and Recreation's Natural Area Program. These two lots connect to an existing open space and will serve as a buffer between residential areas and natural areas to increase wildlife habitat and to protect existing habitat. The purchase price is $140,000. Closing costs are estimated at $5,000, and the city will spend about $2,000 to stabilize the site and prepare it for public ownership, which includes managing vegetation, removing trash, installing signage. Half of the funding will come from Portland's local share of the Metro Natural Areas bond, and the other half will come from the Bureau of Environmental Services. This is an emergency ordinance because the closing is scheduled for September 7th, and a delay in passage may prevent completion of closing in a timely manner. So I urge your support.
Council discussion of 1099. Anyone wish to testify on emergency ordinance 1099?
Should be noted there is a Scribner's error in the section 1, number 4. The tax lot, second part should be tax lot 4300 instead of 4500.
Do we need to amend that officially or just?
Just a Scribner's error.
The Scribner's error. The auditor's office will make the correction.
Can you please call the roll?
Mm-hmm. Saltzman.
Well, thank you for catching that. Aye.
Fritz.
In both this and the previous project at Clay Taylor Reconstruction, this is really good work by Mayor Adams as Commissioner Adams when he initiated the Greater Green process and by Commissioner Saltzman in implementing these really great projects which will improve our neighborhoods. Aye.
Fish.
I'm not only going to vote aye on this, but this is also a chance for me to thank Dan for the support that he gave to the Parks Bureau this year to launch the Youth Conservation Corps and the opportunities for 64 kids to do work in our removing invasive species and learning about the natural areas. And you've been a great partner. The program's been a huge success. It's another example of bureaus working together on what has been an issue framed by the mayor as a council priority. So pleased to work with you and support you today. Aye.
Adams.
I'd like to associate myself with Commissioner Fish's comments as well. Really appreciate it. And lot by lot, purchase by purchase, we're bringing more open green space and open space to East Portland. And really appreciate your leadership, Commissioner Saltzman. Aye. 1099 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading, 1100?
Authorized contract with Brown and Caldwell for professional engineering services for the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant Solids Lagoon Reconstruction Update Project Number E09184.
Please call the roll.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1100 is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, council calendar item 1101?
Authorize Portland Parks and Recreation to accept a grant award of $20,900 from the Oregon State Marine Board Maintenance Assistance Program for maintenance of boating facilities.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you. We'll do a 15-second presentation, Mayor. This is normally on consent. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Good morning. I'm Kelly Torres-Walker. I'm the grant coordinator for Portland Parks. This is typically a grant that would be filed in consent. It was filed in regular. It's something that we receive every year for the last several years. It helps us with maintenance funds for all of the docks that Portland Parks and Recreation maintains through the year.
Thank you for an excellent presentation.
That was. Does anyone wish to testify on council item 1101. Carla, can you please read the, please call the roll on 1101.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you for putting this on the regular agenda because it is important to know when we're getting these grants and doing good work. And I'm also going to take this opportunity to thank the Parks Department for all of the neighborhood night out parties last night, which is an amazing feat to be able to organize 160 plus parties, and pretty much all of Portland's parks, I think, hosted one. And so thank you. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Can you please, approved, can you please read the title, second reading, item 1102?
Approve the designation of 12 trees as Portland Heritage Trees.
Please call the roll.
Saltzman?
Well, as Commissioner Fish alluded to last week, this is one of my favorite things, is designating heritage trees in our city. We truly are blessed to have a city of outstanding urban forest and outstanding trees. One of the things I enjoy about getting out and campaigning in neighborhoods is often the show-stopping trees that I see in people's yards or in street trees throughout different neighborhoods. It's just simply incredible. And I appreciate the work of the Heritage Tree Committee in bringing forward to us, I believe it was 12 trees for designation for hopefully protection in perpetuity. This is good work. We are very proud of our trees in our city, and I appreciate the work of the Parks Commissioner in this as well. Aye.
Fritz.
I echo those sentiments and note that this is a voluntary program where property owners volunteer to put restrictions on their property, on their trees, and I greatly appreciate that. And I also appreciate that this council prioritized finishing up the tree project in this year's budget so that we can look at how we do tree protection citywide and whether there are other things that the council and the regulations can do to help protect trees during development or at other times. In the meantime, this is a really great project. Aye.
Fish.
We'll be launching a big public information campaign this fall as people start thinking about planting trees on their property. We'll be advertising a website and a phone number that people can call. We want to assist people, and we also want to make sure that where necessary they obtain the permits that are required to do work on trees. In addition, one of the trees we're going to designate today is the Douglas fir that is at the Lone Fir Cemetery. And as you know, there's a very active group of Friends of Lone Fir, and they do a Halloween event, among other things. And the Metro president and I exchanged emails last week, and they want to actually engage the Friends of Lone Fir and the people who are maintaining the cemetery in an event to put the plaque in. So we have some people very excited that Douglas fir is now going to be protected. So thank you, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Adams.
Aye. 1102 is approved. Unless there's additional council business, we stand adjourned until next week.